Is that a young Chris Clark in that photo?
Yeah, it's that's my mom and I from a long time ago. I'd updated
That's a
that
good
when she
photo.
passed years ago. I just haven't changed it. I never go into Facebook, so I don't know why it's got my old Facebook photo on for Zoom, but
That's a
it's a
good
little
photo,
funny.
man. Don't get rid of it. Hey, George.
G'day.
All right, before we get started, gents, has anyone got any wins they want to bring up this week? Anything particularly good that's happened in the last few weeks? Weight loss, muscle gain, whatever it may be. Happy to hear them. I can call you out as well. George, any wins for the last few weeks?
I've committed to Costa Rica, which is awesome, and I've done a bit of an early training, a plan set out with Gavin, with a bit of a detour to New York for a couple of weeks. But apart from that, it'll be 4 months of solid work.
Nice.
And that's a win.
You must be Gavin's famous Australian client. I've heard the name mentioned many times, but now I can put a face to
Part of it's correct. Yeah, Australian
it.
from Sydney, yes, famous snow. So I've been
Oh,
working with Gavin for nearly 2 years now.
nice. I saw some of your photos, man. Like you've had a great transformation.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Chris, any big wins?
Not really.
Nothing.
No, I put on a bit of weight the last couple of weeks, so I don't know what's going on there, but try not to let it mess with my head too much.
Yeah, well, how much weight have you dropped in total?
Total, well, I was down about 50, but I put on about 8 or 9 just in a week, so.
You're using a lot of peptides at the moment, though, aren't you?
No, I just got off of Ipamorlin. I was using Ipamorlin, I also got my TRT back up. I think I had this problem where I dropped the ball. Anyway, long story short, I think my T was low for the last month or two. So I'm hoping maybe that's some of the gains right now. But yeah.
It could be increasing testosterone will do that pretty quickly, but also, like, I mean, Ipamorlin and Tessamorlin, I've messed around them with myself and also with clients in the past. They're great for like body composition, but there's a lot of water retention that comes with them.
Okay.
They are really effective. Like I remember, like even when Gav was playing with them a little bit as well, and he was dropping body fat every week, you could tell, but his weight stayed exactly the same. So they
Okay.
could be playing a little bit of a role here at least.
Yeah. And I tweaked my knee playing softball, and so I got a hold of some BPC and some GHKCU. I'm just trying to find the right dosages for that and like the proper mixture. So I don't know if you happen to have a protocol for that, but I don't want to take up too much time here. But if you could.
No, I'll only take a sec. With the BPC, GHK, did you get injectable GHK?
Yeah. And all I've found is information for topical. So I can't really, I've been doing like, I was looking up some of the.
I'll find one for injectable. I haven't actually seen a dosage for that very often. It's
Yeah.
normally the topical. With regards to BPC, you can play around with that a little bit. So, like, you look at like the maintenance dose of it tends to be about 250 micrograms a day. But initially, with injury, you can go up to upwards of 1 milligram a day for a few days.
Okay, I might try that. Just to, I've also been had this weird shoulder problem that I can't seem to get rid of. So I was gonna try some local as well.
Like within reason with BPC, you can mess around with pretty high dosages. It seems to be still effective. Like I've seen anecdotal stuff of people like injecting milligrams of it daily while taking tablets at the same time. And there doesn't seem to be, like I said, within reason, too much of a top end. The doc's in the room. Jacques, how are you doing? May respond. Anybody else want to throw in any wins they've had over the last couple of weeks before we get started? Good to hear, brother. We good? Okay. So normally when you get me on calls, you guys know it's generally about nutrition. Something I wanted to go through a little bit differently today, only because I can imagine that the vast majority of you are seeing a lot of this stuff out in the Twittersphere or wherever you might get some of your nutritional information from, right? So you guys have heard about Ozempic at some stage, I assume. Has anybody tried it? No? Does anybody know anybody who's taking Ozempic? A few? Yeah. Before I get into the presentation, does anybody know, or does anybody have heard some of the side effects that tend to come with it? Blurt them out. So you can either put them in the chat or speak.
Poor sleep.
Poor sleep. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later because that's an interesting one. We got the doc on as well. He could help. Jack. Gastroparesis. I haven't seen the psychological, like, so you go through the research on it, you don't find too much psychological side effects in it. Well, that's really interesting. But gastroparesis, definitely. So you find that a lot of the side effects, we'll go through them anyway. Muscle loss is a big one. And we'll get through it as we go through the presentation, but it's important to understand, is the muscle loss associated with the actual drug, or is it the side effects that are causing that? We will go through that. Actually, let me get this up in the background before we get started. You'd think I'd have it ready, wouldn't you? I do. So I wanted to clear up some of, well, I guess they may be misconceptions to you, but I wanted to kind of clear up some of the side effects that tend to come with it, how common they are. When you look at some of these drugs, it's important to remember, I would say for the vast majority of you guys, this isn't targeted at you per se, right? So most of the guys in here, I use the word discipline flexibly, but most of you guys do what you need to do in order to drop body fat, and you may not need to use these drugs. But I can guarantee once the market can actually catch up with the demand for these, you're going to know a lot of people that are going to be using these drugs and trying to use things. And trying to offset some of the side effects could be really beneficial. I guarantee it's going to be family members, it's going to be close friends at some stage because they are extremely effective at what they do. However, there are side effects. So I wanted to go through some of the mechanisms of GLP-1 and its role in weight loss. I'll touch on what they are. Most of you guys will know this drug as Ozempic, which is what we tend to see its brand name as. There's a few other types now. They're starting to expand out on these drugs and they're starting to hit multiple mechanisms with them. So they're not just playing on, I'll tell you what GLP-1 is, but they're not just playing on that anymore. They're playing on a bunch of different mechanisms like GIP and a few other incretins at the same time. And they're going to become more and more effective. My thing to consider, and for you guys to consider as we go through this, will it solve the obesity problem, or will it actually just increase our weight? Like we're getting, it'll make us better at weight loss, but will it solve the problem? And we'll touch on that as we go through. So when we think about the learning outcomes, we want to understand the role of it. So what is it? What does it do? We'll talk about like some of the challenges and solutions in weight management. So like, although this is going to solve, it could solve the weight loss problem, is it going to solve the weight maintenance problem? Okay. And then potential side effects that come with it. Long-term weight maintenance, we'll touch on a little bit, but I'm not going to go into too much detail. And then kind of evidence-based practices where you can combine all this stuff together for either you or people that you might know in regards to this drug. All it is a class of medication for type 2 diabetics initially. Now it's getting pushed out for obesity because obviously they saw the really cool side effects that it actually leads to quite dramatic weight loss. But all it is, GLP-1 is an incretin that's released predominantly in the L cells of our small intestine. You don't have to worry about that too much, but it's called glucagon-like peptide 1. What it actually does, it has a few different mechanisms, but the main mechanism of why they brought it to market was it helps to regulate blood sugar really, really well. So when people with obesity or type 2 diabetes, they lose their ability to regulate their own blood sugar well, at least. So what this does really well is it creates almost like pre-insulin. So for you guys who don't know the mechanism there, when we eat a load of glucose or a lot of sugar or carbohydrates, whatever it may be, that eventually gets into our bloodstream and leads to increased blood sugar. Insulin will then respond to that and tell the cells within our body that there's glucose in circulation. So the cell will uptake them to create energy, right? Simple-ish approach. But what you tend to find in people who have this dysregulated is the insulin response doesn't happen very quickly or effectively. So they'll eat a bunch of glucose, carbohydrates, sugar, whatever that looks like. Blood sugar will go really high, and then insulin released from the pancreas will have an over-exaggerated response. So you'll see these really high blood sugar spikes, really high insulin release, and then it'll lead to low blood sugar. So you get these ebbs and flows throughout people's days. And when you look at type 2 diabetics, people who are obese, we'll touch on the brain mechanism in a minute, but they can't regulate their own appetite anymore because they're stuck on the blood sugar roller coaster all day, where they're getting high blood sugar, low blood sugar, and their appetite is totally dictated, and how they feel is totally dictated by where their blood sugar is. Whether I would say for the majority of people, probably all of us in this room, we can regulate our own blood sugar fairly effectively. But when we think of the mechanisms, we spoke about insulin secretion, right? So it helps to regulate blood sugar. It releases preformed insulin or proinsulin really well. And we release, if we had 10 units of sugar, we'll release 10 units of insulin, and it tends to balance itself out. So you find that it helps to regulate appetite in that way. You'll see an inhibition of glucagon secretion. Don't worry about this too much, but glucagon is almost works opposing to insulin. So it will liberate stored glucose, but also help the body create its own. So it'll inhibit that, so you won't create any more intrinsically. Now, some of the stuff that they notice that this obviously does is it dampens appetite dramatically in people. And there's a few ways in which it does this. It'll delay gastric emptying, and this is what's leading to some of the side effects in certain people. So when we eat food, the speed at which it moves through our digestion will determine how full we feel. So whether by the elastic feeling within our stomach or the hormonal response to the food we eat. So if we can use these drugs to slow gastric emptying, we'll feel fuller for longer, which will lead to a reduction of food intake. It's that mechanism is relatively simple, but it acts directly at the brain. So the hypothalamus in our brain is like it's the dictator is the wrong word, but it regulates everything throughout the body. So it will regulate our appetite. It's like the guy who stands in front of an orchestra. The word is escaping me right now. And it'll dictate everything that goes on in terms of appetite, food intake, energy expenditure. It does all those things. However, someone giving me the answer, Maestro. Yes. So it will dictate all these things. But what happens when we lose control of appetite, whether it's from overeating, stressful lifestyle, poor childhood, all these different reasons that can lead us to be obese, overweight, type 2 diabetic, our hypothalamus inevitably becomes quite inflamed. And it stops receiving the mechanism from the rest of the body to signal that we're full. So we have another hormone that we release from fat cells. It's called leptin. And when everything's working well, leptin will signal to the brain long-term energy storage. So it'll say, look, Greg, George, whoever has eaten enough food, he doesn't need any more. So it will downregulate all the orexigenic hormones. So it'll tell like ghrelin and all these hormones to relax so that we don't need to go and pursue food. What you find with people in these kind of circumstances is they become leptin resistant. So the brain no longer hears the signal. So, and I'm sure the majority of us have been in this situation at some stage in our life. You look at someone who's overweight, obese, whatever, type 2 diabetic, and you think to yourself, why don't they just eat less? And we've all been there. And yes, obviously, it's an important aspect in regards to controlling their disease, but it's poor advice in the sense that their brain chemistry is so messed up that they struggle to regulate themselves. So they never get the feeling of satiety. And they have this unbelievable craving for hyper palatable processed food. But what GLP-1 does so well is it dampens the inflammation in your brain. It resensitizes your brain to insulin or to leptin, I should say. Well, at least they think it does. But also, there's receptors directly in the hypothalamus for GLP-1. So it goes in there, signals to the brain that you are full, even if you've taken in very little food. So it works almost miraculously well at dampening people's appetite, depending on the dosage you use, right? So there might be flexibility for the likes of us guys who just want to get really lean or are going on a mini cut to use small dosages of this drug, avoid the negative side effects and get the benefits of appetite suppression. That might be a thing, but it does work so well in high dosages of doing that. Now, some of the cardiovascular effects are really cool, but they kind of contraindicate each other, but I'll go through that in a second. So like you tend to see a drop in blood pressure, so you tend to pee out more sodium when you use this drug. It also tends to increase nitric oxide. Those things are really, really important for cardiovascular health. So there is a lot of benefits to it. You guys mentioned a little bit of some of the negatives, right? So gastroparesis was mentioned, muscle loss was mentioned, psychosis, which I haven't heard, which I find very fascinating, and I'm going to ask you about later, has been mentioned. These tend to be the most common side effects. So when we slow down, let's go through the gastrointestinal ones first. When we slow down gastric motility, so when we slow down the transit time, there's no nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, really common with this drug, really common. And they tend to be transient-ish. So most people, they'll pass, but for a lot of people have to discontinue this drug because some of this gets so bad. Like the nausea, the vomiting can be very intense for a lot of people and they can't tolerate it well. You also see a lot of reflux, right? Which reflux over time can lead to things like gastritis and further things down the line. So you see increased risk of Barrett's disease, right? There is an increased heart rate. So this is where like we talk about cardiovascular health, lowering blood pressure, losing weight, all these really cool things. But heart rate can go up from anywhere to 3 beats per minute to 10 beats per minute. And if you think about someone who's obese and you give them these drugs and their heart rate goes up, their heart rate could be already at 80 beats per minute and it goes up to 90, you're starting to get into risky increased heart rate there. So definitely of concern. Gastroparesis was already mentioned, pancreatitis, gallbladder stones, removal. There is some risk in terms of hepatic or biliary cancer with this. And the percentages are higher than you think. So when you start to branch all these issues, diseases together, it's upwards of 4% get gastroparesis, pancreatitis, or some sort of gallbladder issue from these medications. Tends to be in the ones who take it long term and high dose, but it's well worth emphasizing. If you have digestive health issues already, it's probably not the drug for you. You're probably going to exacerbate it. So you're finding that there's a lot of case studies out there emphasizing that SIBO is becoming really common in people who have used these drugs. They haven't researched it effectively, and I can guarantee you it's going to be a problem. SIBO is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth for anyone who doesn't know that, where like the bacteria in your large intestine creeps up into your small intestine and it causes a lot of real negative side effects like bloating, distension, discomfort, diarrhea, constipation, reflux, all these things. The price can depends whether you're getting it online, you're getting it from your buddy in the gym. I don't know those particular prices, but it's ranging, if you're getting it on prescription, somewhere between $800 and $1,300 a month. It's expensive, right? The potential for weight regain after cessation. Look, this is going to help with the weight loss problem, but I don't think as a population we have a weight loss problem. We've got a weight maintenance problem. So 6 out of 7 people who become obese will lose 10% of their body weight at some stage in their lifetime. 3% of those people will maintain it. So we don't really have a weight loss problem. We've got a weight maintenance problem. So this will obviously increase the weight loss or make it quicker or make it easier for people. But it's not resolving the underlying psychological issue or physiological issue as to why they were obese in the first place. If you're eating McDonald's chips and soda and you begin to use these drugs, you'll eat a lot less of those things and you will lose weight. But what is going to happen at the end of it? You're just going to go back to old habits. And it touches on to what happens next. We tend to see a lot of muscle loss when people use these drugs. So up to 30 to 50% of total weight loss from GLP-1 agonists come from lean tissue. Lean tissue doesn't only mean muscle, so it can be organ, bone, connective tissue, all these things. But we see a lot of bone loss with these drugs as well. However, it makes me like think about you guys. Do you think it's a side effect of the drugs, the muscle wasting? Or do you think it's a direct cause of the drug, or do you think it's cause of the side effect? The research seems to indicate it's a side effect of the drug. So the appetite suppression is what seems to cause muscle loss. So you'll find that people don't eat protein, they don't resistance train, and they eat super low calorie. So it's like bariatric surgery, right? It's like pushing through. Yeah, I know the percentages are wild. So it's like bariatric surgery or sleeves or whatever ways that they get people to lose weight. Those people don't learn proper eating habits. So therefore, that's actually not what we're trying to go through. So they don't learn appropriate eating habits. They eat really low protein. They don't resistance train. Therefore, most of the muscle loss, most a lot of the weight loss can come from muscle. It's important to remember though that when they put people in super big calorie deficits, 40%, 50%, they give them enough protein. They make sure that they lift heavy with high intensities. They don't lose muscle. So I have a feeling, I haven't seen any studies on it. If anyone has seen them, correct me. I've seen them in bone density. But I doubt you will lose muscle mass if you eat appropriately during this. They did one where they people who lost quite a significant amount of muscle loss without resistance training. When they gave them resistance training with these drugs, they didn't lose bone mass. So I don't think the muscle loss is because of the drug, it's because of the side effects. So we got to do all the standard shit that you guys know, right? You got to be eating at least a gram of protein per pound. You have to do high intensity resistance training, prioritize sleep and recovery, supplementation. Some of it can be beneficial here. Creatine, essential amino acids, HMB have been shown to help maintain muscle mass while people go through dramatic weight loss. Maintain adequate hydration, include aerobic training, like real traditional stuff. So it doesn't seem to be the case. Now, you could extend this list dramatically. But when you're managing gastrointestinal issues, if anybody plans to use this drug, you look at the research, it's crap in general at trying to deal with some of the effects. But like some of the stuff that's mentioned are like probiotics, ginger, PHGG, prokinetics, stuff like that. But eating smaller, nutrient-dense meals more frequently and avoiding large amounts of liquid with meals, that's generally all the research does. But like Jack will tell you, like when you're dealing with the symptoms, so whether it's constipation or diarrhea, there's specific protocols that you can use for those things. But a lot of the time it tends to pass. But it's so worth emphasizing that serious gastrointestinal complications can come from this drug. And it's, although like 4% end in disease almost, you can imagine that that percentage is much higher for serious complications. Now, regulating heart rate. If your heart rate increases by 10 beats per minute, it's quite significant. You can look at lifestyle stuff like aerobic exercise, right? You know, breath work, whatever it may be. Because it plays on the SA node of the heart, like it increases sympathetic tone. So it puts us into fight or flight just in of itself. So using stuff to dampen that can be beneficial. Omega-3, magnesium, CoQ10. There's all sorts of other stuff out there that you can use. Phosphatidylserine will do it. Hawthorn extract has been shown to be beneficial. But just being aware of it is really important. And emphasizing sleep. Like the sleep disturbances are a tricky one because if you look at the research, it doesn't show that. It shows that it improves sleep. Because if you have people who are dramatically overweight and have and suffer with sleep apnea, it'll improve those things. But anecdotally, I've heard loads of really bad experiences that people have had with sleep with this drug. So looking at stuff to manage that is obviously going to be of benefit to you, whether you use glycinate 3 and 8 form of magnesium, phosphatidylserine, melatonin, whatever it may be, whatever your choice is. If it ever happens to you, you can message me. We'll go through it in more detail. But looking at regulating the side effects of these drugs is really, really important. And something that I've been looking at, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on this, but for you guys who are looking for performance, so whether that's muscle growth, fat loss, brain performance, longevity, the science on peptides is getting really dense and really fucking good. So if you want to use like if you were to use additional peptides, there's loads of different ones you can use. I'm not going to go through all these in detail. Not next month, so we're in, so it'll be October, no, September I'm going to do it. I'll do a presentation on the best peptides for different conditions. So whether it's fat loss, muscle growth, wound healing, or longevity, immune system, whatever it is, I'll give you the protocols for those things because it's real tip of the spear stuff. So, like, if your diet's not right and your sleep's not right and all those other things, I wouldn't necessarily be pushing down the peptide realm yet. But if you're there and you're doing everything else right, some of this stuff is super effective. But like some of these mechanisms, you'll see some of this stuff like MOTC, SS31, they'll make your mitochondria work better. Some of the other stuff that you can use that has been shown to be effective with appetite suppression. If anyone wants to, you can try and mess around. I've messed around with it before. Like tesofensine is a triple monoamine oxidase inhibitor. So It almost acts like an antidepressant. So it keeps serotonin, dopamine, and adrenaline around for longer in the brain, but it dampens appetite massively. I've used it before, and don't get me wrong, it dampens appetite. Some people say they feel brilliant on it. For me, it made me a little bit too anxious. So I didn't use it consistently, and it really affected my sleep. But there's loads of different peptides that you can use, and I will go through. That's a call for you guys who want to really you get the extra 5-10% from whatever it is that you're trying to do. The peptide call will be worth it. But that brings us back, right? Do we think this drug is good or bad? And I'd love to hear you, I'd love to hear what you guys think about it. Because I think this is almost acts like a miracle drug. It works extremely well, but I'm almost waiting for something really bad just to go kaboom. I just don't know what it is yet. So I'd love to hear what you guys think about it. If you guys have any experience with it, if you guys have used any peptides, and what you actually think will happen. Anybody? Or do you know anybody using it, and have they had success with it?
Yeah, I can tell you on my end of things. The psychosis piece is something that the gym that I go to, there was a girl that was at the front desk, and she was in like decent shape before. She had type 1 diabetes. She had some weight gain. She was drinking a lot, and she used semaglutide. I think it was Ozempic. I think it was the brand name or whatever for it. And she dropped a boatload of weight, and then she felt trapped inside of her body. She felt absolutely terrible. She had horrible diarrhea, horrible gastroparesis, and the doctor was basically like, you have to stay on this for forever. So she kind of felt like she was claustrophobic around it. Mood, irritability, she's not as chipper as she once was. She continued, I just saw her today. She continues to lose more and more and more weight to the point where, like, I think I could flick her arm and I could break her humerus because of how thin and frail she looks. So that was just one of the things that I've seen. But you can lose weight really fast, but I don't know what the long-term side effects of this stuff is or are. And I've heard that, I'm trying to look up the research on it, that the fat that you lose, supposedly you destroy the fat cells, but they actually replicate. So you end up with more fat cells than you originally had prior to use of semaglutide. So that if you have more fat cell expansion, you can store more toxins, more water weight. And so the rebound post semaglutide could be far worse than what we may see currently.
Yeah, like I don't think this solves our weight, our fat loss problem.
Yeah.
I think it'll work really well for a lot of people. And I think you're going to find the vast majority of the overweight population on this, but they are inevitably going to rebound. So, whether by the physiological reasons that you're talking about, right? So, if we get duplication of fat cells, we just find it way easier to put the weight back on. And then you'll see them drop massive amounts of muscle mass at the same time. So it's inevitably we're going to see people drop a bunch of weight, but just put it back on with probably worse digestive function afterwards. I think that it can be used effectively though. So I think if you can get someone, obviously some of the side effects you might not be able to mitigate. So some people won't be able to use this effectively, but I think if you can use it at lower dosages and you can maintain muscle mass and offset some of the side effects, I think it can be used effectively. But I think it's going to be massively abused as the years go on. And they're coming out with super fancy, like you see tirzepatide coming out now, which is a GIP agonist as well. They're coming out with a triple agonist, which is just going to work so well. But we just don't know what it's going to do elsewhere. Has anybody used peptides in the past? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I guess I was just gonna say maybe it's a mindset that I just have, maybe a little bit old school, but I feel like almost like you said, peptides are ideal for the tip of the spear kind of a situation where you've got a good foundation and you're using something like that to kind of enhance and get that extra 5-10%. where people get in trouble. I think you're talking about where this kind of time bomb looking to go off is where they're looking for that miracle drug to cut corners, make it super easy, and just, give me all the results I want without any real effort. I feel like that is kind of setting yourself up for a disaster in one way or another before the drug goes sideways or there's a results you just can't control.
Yeah, like absolutely, because it doesn't solve the underlying problem. Because most, well, I was saying this not knowing much about the psychological side of things, but like the vast majority of people's issues with weight are very much psychological as they are physiological. So you're not teaching people anything with using these drugs. You're just finding that they'll be able to eat less way more effectively. So unless they come out with some not necessarily a pharmaceutical compound, but a weight loss protocol with psychological intervention, you're gonna have people using this drug just to skip corners within reason. Yeah. Has anybody got any questions outside of that? So whether you want to go through anything, nutrition, training, lifestyle, or other peptides. I have a decent knowledge of other peptides, not a dramatic amount, but I could probably give you some information.
Do you have any experience with Surmorelin?
Go, Jack. I don't.
So Surmorelin, if I remember correctly, that's the growth hormone agonist. So to try to produce, you tell your body to produce more growth hormone. I took it for a little bit. I always just try to be careful. Anything that's going to push growth hormone up, I'm like super anal about like cancers and things. So if you're going to be increasing growth hormone, be careful that you don't already have any form of like benign tumor or a cancerous tumor or prostate issues. Because I've seen patients jump on this stuff and their PSA jumps through the roof just through usage of it. If you're clear, I've had people have phenomenal results in recovery with use of that peptide.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. I didn't hear you mention Ipamorelin. Yeah, like Ipamorelin, Tesamorelin, like these GH analogs. I've used them personally myself, and I have used them with clients. I think that the stuff that Jack mentioned is really important to think about as well. But like, I have seen quite, I'd say not dramatic, but I've seen clients who are really stubborn and losing fat, that it does have quite a positive effect. It's not magic, possibly in the same way that something like semaglutide is, but it does work. It also, and me personally, growth hormone tends to do that for a lot of people. It put me to bed at night, though. Like, I mean, I literally, like, I hit the bed, my head went down, and I woke up 8 hours later. It was bizarre.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
No problem. Anybody else got any questions while we're here, gents?
Do you have any experience with digestive peptides or like digestion and stuff?
Like BPC?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not really familiar with peptides at all, but I kind of struggled with digestive kind of my whole life, really. It's only really the last year and a half, 2 years it started to kind of start to take shape. So I'm kind of looking for that extra 5-10%.
BPC taken orally seems to be really, really effective. It's isolated from, I'm sure, gastric juice anyway, BPC. But it increases angiogenesis, so it'll increase blood flow to injured areas really, really well. So if your problem's intestinal permeability or leaky gut, I would say it'd be really beneficial. Probably better off taking it orally in tablet form. I think, and correct me anyone if they know, it might be selectively antimicrobial, so it might kill off some bad bacteria at the same time. But if your problem's not leaky gut, I don't know how much effect it will have. Stuff like GHKCU seems to be beneficial in that similar vein. So I'll put those ones into the chat just so you can see them, Des. So GHKCU, C157. They tend to be good for wound healing in general. Anybody who's got a wife, a girlfriend who's worried about skin care, If you get them GHKCU, it'll change their lives. It's better than Botox. Because you can get it topically. If you're worried
What
about
was that?
things,
What
go
was it again, Greg? What was that? I'm sorry, I'm taking some notes. What was that again?
on. That's GHKCU. So you can get that topically, and it tends to work really well.
Are there downsides to something like that?
Yeah, I haven't seen like I haven't seen much like you have to remember a lot of these peptides have been around for decades now. So like the Russians were playing around with this stuff way before we were, and they're fairly well studied. Not that many studies in humans as much as you'd want. So a lot of animal studies, but with GHK, BPC, these kind of ones, I just haven't seen any. People get weird reactions to a lot of stuff, right? So, like, some people might, but I very much doubt you'll see any with those. GHK has been shown to be really effective, like as an immune regulator, and just for general longevity, has been shown to be really, really good.
Hey Greg, with the BPC 5157, will it do both work on the gut and maybe a previous injury that you're working on at the same time, or is it very selective? I know it's gut. I guess the protein comes from the gut or kind of was originated from the gut, but I've heard that it'll do great work for stuff like rotator cuff and other kind of injuries around the body. I don't know if
Yeah.
you can inject locally, but
Yeah, it's really good everywhere. Now, I anecdotally I've heard that even taking it orally can have systemic effects. Never seen a study on it, which means that if you take it orally, it could still have an effect on injuries elsewhere outside the gut, particularly. But I would probably want to look at it. If you're looking like at a rotator cuff, I'd probably look to inject relatively close to the site.
thanks.
The only side effects you get with those kind of ones is actually just site irritation. So I've had a few people who have had that.
I was looking more two birds, one stone type of situation, but
Yeah, no, you will get a little bit of it. Like, don't get me wrong. I've had people who've had positive effects with like ankle injuries, knee injuries by taking it orally. I just don't know how quick it would happen that way.
makes sense.
Anybody else have any questions? Doesn't necessarily have to be a peptide, boys. No? You sure? All right, gents. Love to everybody. I'll see you all soon.
Thanks.
Nice one, guys. Speak soon.